from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart, because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you could imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I'd known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody, and a warm welcome to our special guest today, Matt Hendrick, coming to us from the Denver, Colorado area. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Eric. How you doing?
Good. It is good to see you. How are you feeling today?
I'm doing good. Good to see you, too.
I don't know if people can tell, but let's get this out of the way. You're in a wheelchair. What happened about 30 years ago?
I was in a pretty bad car accident when I was 21. I was sleeping in the passenger side, and I was had the seat leaned all the way back, and it was one of those cars where you had to fasten the lap belt yourself. You would shut the door, and the shoulder belt would come on automatically, and got in for a ride, and I leaned the seat back, and I was sleeping, and I hadn't fastened the lap belt. We got in a car accident, and we hit something going about 25 to 30 miles an hour. And I came around the shoulder belt, and it saved my life, but also broke my neck at the same time. And I became a quadriplegic, a C5-6 quadriplegic.
Wow. I know that makes life tough, but you have such a great attitude. You're like my hero here. And the fact that you can do artwork, beautiful paintings, really says something about you and your resiliency.
Yeah, thank you. I do a little bit of like abstract type artwork. Let me tell you first that I can move my shoulders and my biceps, but I have very little use, probably hardly any at all use of my triceps. And I have a little bit of wrist function, but no hand movement, no fingers. That's in the definition of quadriplegia is partial or full paralysis in all four limbs. So I have the partial paralysis, and I'll do my artwork. So I've kind of come up with a technique where I can use my hands to do kind of like an abstract, colorful background. And then I do mouth painting with the brush in my mouth as well. I'll switch and I'll do like a portrait or some sort of more detailed, picture, whatever the subject of the picture. I'll do it a little bit more detailed with the mouth painting. It's like using your hand for me, and it's actually a little bit better because I can get my eyes right near the brush, and I don't know. It's something to try if you haven't tried it.
I haven't tried it. By the way, people can see your artwork, your book that we'll also talk a little bit about, and a beautiful video about your mouth painting at hendrickmedia.com. And I wish I had filmed your video. It's very well done.
Is that the documentary?
It's about 2 minutes long.
Yeah, it's done by the Denver Post.
I don't know who produced it, but if it was Denver Post, hey, that's a nice job of filming for some newspaper guys.
Yeah, they did good. They actually had me on the front page that day and had my whole story on there. It's pretty cool.
Well, is there anything else that you can tell us about you personally, just so people can get to know you?
I'm an author, as well. And I like to work out, and I'm very active in the disabled community in Colorado. And I found that this injury, there's a lot of lemons involved, but there are some good days. So I just try to I try to send a message to people of, you know, like some of the little things in life that seem so horrible that, you know, they're not really that bad. You can get over it. And just, I try to encourage people to have a good attitude. And so I just try to be that way myself as an inspiration or role model, maybe to encourage people to, you know, not give up when things are rough and stuff like that.
Great attitude. All right, let's jump right into the near-death experience. I need to put an S on that because you've had four.
Yes, I've had four.
Yeah. We're going to mostly talk about your last one, your most recent one, but I do want to touch briefly on a couple of the first ones. I think we should go back to 1991 when you had the car accident, because this was your first experience with a near-death experience. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that? Just briefly, what happened in the accident? You mentioned the seatbelt thing, but what happened immediately after that?
Immediately after that, I woke up and people were knocking on the window and asking if I was okay. And I kind of blacked out quite a bit. I kind of have a little slideshow, like video clips of what happened for the next probably month. The next thing I remember, I'm being hoisted up into the helicopter for the flight for life. And then some other little memories of, you know, the hospital people wake up and I'm kind of telling them I need to get to class, get back to college and do my homework and stuff. And they're basically telling me that I'm paralyzed and, you know, I go in and out of consciousness. And then eventually I got back to Colorado. We had a medical jet bring me home. I had a surgery to stabilize my neck. It's a halo procedure is what they call it. They don't really do those anymore. And it's pretty horrific. They put screws into your head, in the front, in your forehead, and in the back. And they put this like contraption on you that you can't move your neck at all for like 8 weeks. And you have to move your eyes around like this to see stuff. And
I've seen pictures of people with those on. It looks just like a torture chamber device.
Yeah, I can tell you it is. It's really weird when they take it off and they unscrew it because they don't put you under for that, but you're under when they put it on. You can hear the screws coming out. It's pretty wild. But I think it was during that surgery when I had my first experience. You know, it's the tunnel of light kind of thing.
Yeah, go ahead and start to give us some detail on that.
You know, I just sort of came to and I'm being lifted up this tunnel and there's a white light at the top and I could see three darker silhouettes up there and it was like human voices and they're encouraging me to relax and give up and just give up, you know, and they would say, this is over. This one's over. It was very, very comforting. That's one thing I remember, like, whoa, this is better than anything I'd experienced in reality. I had a bunch of friends from high school and college visiting. Right when the medical jet landed, they were all there and they were hanging around the hospital to support me before this surgery. And there was lots of girls from high school and college that had showed up. And I remember it meaning a lot to me, you know, that they actually had cared about me. Some of them I thought didn't know I existed. And I went into that surgery and I remember trying to talk to the voices at the top of the tunnel and say, you know, I don't want to go. Wait, hang on. You know, I don't want to go. Have you seen how many women are coming to visit me? And,
I love it.
And they laughed, you know, they laughed so hard. And I went right back down into my body. Hmm. That was my first experience.
So that was the beginning and end of it.
Yeah.
Pretty girl saved you. I love that.
Yes.
The second one was how many years later?
It was about 15 years later, I would say.
And this was also in a hospital stay. Were you having surgery again, or what happened?
I had a collapsed lung, and I had a complication in the hospital where the chest tube clipped an artery between my ribs, and I started bleeding to death. And they did a code blue in the hospital, and they brought the troops, everybody that was available. They came, and each person tried to revive me. And that one, as my blood pressure started going down, they were announcing the blood pressure. And I can remember, it got pretty low. It got as low as I am 60 for the high number. I can't remember the lower number, but as it was going down like that, I would see the white, plasma, like this milky kind of strange white light. And I could see people moving around. There was one nurse with some blue glasses and a ponytail, and she was whipping her ponytail around, and I could kind of, it was like, it was kind of making trails in the, through the white, very bizarre. And when they would come in real close to my face and say, "Are you okay?" I would see their whole face. That was a little bit strange too. But eventually they got, one of the doctors, I think it was a doctor, had come in, and she got something into my neck and down into the, like a catheter down into my heart area almost. And they pumped some stuff in there, and I came back immediately. But that one, the white, and, it was weird. It was very calming. I wasn't scared. I wasn't like, "Oh, I'm dying," or anything like that. So that was my second experience.
Some people in that kind of situation have told me that they found themselves out of their body, like up near the ceiling in the corner of the room and sort of watching what was going on. Was that happening to you, or were you still in your body just looking up at people as things were happening?
I was still in the body looking up.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to number four, because this is one that's more of the traditional out of the body really went someplace. So let's talk about this one. This was just February of last year. So it was much more recent. I know your memory's clear on this one. Tell me what led up to this.
Yeah, that one, I was in the hospital for a bladder infection that had crossed the blood barrier and became sepsis. I was pretty sick. They had me on some antibiotics for 3 days in the hospital. And for me, it's really hard to do time in the hospital because, I'm not at home with my caregivers and people that help me, roll around in bed, or, they can focus just on me. When you're in the hospital, you have these nurses with, like 40 or 80 people that they have to worry about. And so they kind of leave you alone. And I can't move my hands, like I said earlier, and I have to try to get them to do things the way I do it at home. And one of the nurses there, so let me tell you too, that I have a catheter for urine. And when you're a quadriplegic, they will do this procedure called a suprapubic procedure, where they put a hole in your stomach right below your belly button. And so you'll have a catheter coming out of that hole. It goes into your bladder, and that's how you manage your urine and bladder system when you're in this condition. So the nurse told me, "I'm going to put this sticker on your leg, and you're supposed to put the catheter into the sticker so it doesn't get pulled," basically. And I'm kind of an old school guy, and I don't use those. I just I put the catheter kind of up in my waistband to secure it. And when I sleep, I just have it coming off the bed. And I told her that's how I do it. And she was like, okay. But well, she went and did it anyway and put it on. And I didn't know. I asked them to roll me onto my left side in the middle of the night, and they turned me that way. And I'm thinking in my head, I don't need to check the catheter because, you know, it's going to be covered off, you know, like I do at home. And I had rolled right on top of it and it kinked. For me, that can be really dangerous. It causes another medical thing called autonomic dysreflexia. That it's basically a pain response when you have a spinal cord injury, and you can't really, your body's trying to tell your brain that there's something wrong, but the connection in your spinal cord is kind of a little bit messed up. So your blood pressure goes up and you can ultimately have a stroke and die. So that was happening, but I was sleeping, and in my, I guess it would be a dream. You know, I felt like I had to go to the bathroom real bad because it was kinked and my bladder was filling up, and I could tell that my head was pounding, and I'm like, okay, I need to get somebody in here to help. But I didn't wake up. Usually I would wake up in that situation, and this time I kind of went into this, man, it was pretty cool. Actually, all of a sudden I'm looking up at the sky and it's like purplish black, like a magenta, just real vast sky. Like, you know, nothing like that would be on Earth. And I was standing with a person that I couldn't really see, but I felt like I really knew them well. And we were waiting for the Hawks to show up, which is interesting. Not sure why. We kept waiting, and it's just an overall feeling of, you know, this is home. This is fantastic. Just comfortable. Like, when I talk about stuff like this, I like to tell people that I was in Hawaii once, and the water was 85 degrees and I was underwater, and I was like, this is so pleasant, you know. That's the only thing I can really compare it to, but it was better. You know, it just feels real like you're supposed to be there. It's comfortable. And I could see off in the distance while we were waiting for the Hawks, I could see like a city kind of, and it looked like geometric, like figure, like outlines, and they were like purple, like fluorescent purple. And the background was sort of black and pinks and purples, and it almost looked like crystals. It was very interesting, very, very cool looking. And then the Hawks showed up, and it was like, they were like these big black, it was sort of, it's very hard to describe. They were kind of like a black circle, but the wings looked like almost like a windmill kind of thing. And they were kind of spinning around like in a clockwise motion. Hmm. And they were coming, you know, and they went over the top of us. It was nothing like a hawk that we're used to seeing here in our lives. And then it kind of moved into where I was walking through a field of, like, it was kind of brownish tall grass, and it, you know, there's like a little path, and once again this super comfortable feeling just was there, you know, like this is just awesome. I don't really want to go back to my paralyzed body, for sure. I didn't want to, but I remember looking down and seeing these little insects on the grass blades on the top, and they got on my hand, and they would look, they were kind of looking at me, and it was kind of like a little cartoon-ish looking insects. And they looked at me and they made these little noises, and I got the knowledge, or I don't know what happened. They didn't talk or anything, but all of a sudden I knew that they were responsible for making crop circles. That's what I got from that.
Okay, hold on. Okay, something just blew my mind for a second. So you had some kind of communication that insects let you know they're the ones that make the crop circles that we assume are from aliens or from people trying to play tricks with us.
That's okay. Yes, that's what I got from that.
All right. Interesting. Hey, before we move on, I want to ask you a couple of questions about some of the things you've mentioned so far. First of all, in what way did this feel different than a regular dream that you have when you sleep?
Okay, that's a great question. Well, my dreams when I sleep are always really fragmented. They're very, like, something's always real weird and not, you know, they're not real linear. They're kind of just, you're dropped in this situation and something weird happens and nothing makes sense. And they're very short. And I don't usually remember my dreams. You know, it's always like, oh, that was a dream. That was just a little piece of that dream. This is a lot different.
More real?
It's very, you know, there's no like, this last one we're talking about, there's no like fogginess. It's very linear. It's just like your day would be in life, you know, where.
Did it seem more real than a dream?
Exactly, yeah.
Like you really were real there.
Yeah, even more real than what we're doing here.
Well, I'm not sure how to take that. Okay, you mentioned somebody was with you. Do you have any idea who that was or what kind of being that was?
No, I don't. But they were definitely either from there or they had knowledge of that place because they were the ones telling me about waiting for the hawks. And,
okay.
You know, I felt like I was kind of new.
You've had a year to think about the hawks. That sounds so, it's just different. It's just kind of bizarre. Have you come up with any conclusions as to why hawks? Were they symbolism of something or what's the deal with hawks?
I've seen hawks and eagles in the sky around here and I'm fascinated with those. But I don't know why they would have popped up in the NDE.
Did you feel like you were still in your paralyzed kind of state or you were free from that when you were there?
Oh, definitely free from it.
Tell me about that. Like, were you walking or were you, what do you remember about that?
Yeah, walking. When I put my hand down, I was moving my hand. I could kind of show you my hand here. It's, you know, I can't move my fingers. But in that world, I put my arm down and I could, you know, I was the insects were on my fingers and I was moving my hand around. And I definitely was walking.
Have you been able to paint what you saw there?
No, I have not. I haven't even thought about it till right this second when you just gave me the prompt there.
Okay, I'm your muse for your next project.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait to see it. And then one last thing, then we're going to keep going with your story. I love how you were trying to describe feeling comfortable. I believe you mentioned the word home. Dig a little deeper. What all were you feeling? Comfortable means a lot of different things.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know how you feel like when the temperature's just right and you're like, this is, you know, there's no wind. I guess it was those kind of things. I really was keying in on temperature and just how the body feels, you know, like it almost felt like there was no body involved. You know, there's no like, oh, my ankle hurts, or, you know, my, you know, there's no hunger, no thirst. I can't come up with anything other than, you know, I just kind of felt like I was home. I was like kind of relieved that something was done. I'm finally back.
Okay. Let's pick it up from the hawks. You said the hawks finally arrived?
Yes.
Like two hawks or 200 hawks?
I think it was about three or four, but definitely didn't look like a hawk that you would think, you know, here, one of the raptor types.
What did it look like?
It was kind of like a black center and like a, geez, like kind of like the thing behind you there. That's interesting.
Oh, the ship wheel?
That ship wheel. It was kind of like had a center like that.
It's an antique ship wheel.
Interesting. But the blades coming off of the center were more like curved, kind of like a futuristic high-tech windmill kind of thing, like a fan.
Hmm.
And they were kind of spinning. I guess they were animals, but not, I mean, they don't look like an animal that I've ever seen.
What else did you see? What happened next?
After I saw the insects, I remember continuing through that field on a path, and there was a lot of people with me, and we were in a line, a single file line, and it kind of curved around, and there was a cave, and it just kind of had a dark entrance, and I couldn't really see. I was pretty far away. I was in a line to get to this cave, and everybody was very happy to be in that line, and it was just a positive, like happy vibe, you know, like, okay, you know, we're here. I felt like there were people there that I knew, but I can't tell you who they were.
Fair enough. Anything else?
That's pretty much where it ended. After that, I woke up in my hospital bed and my head is just boom, 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 pounding, pounding, pounding from the autonomic dysreflexia. It had gotten pretty bad. When I'm in the hospital, they have like a little ball that they hang down kind of by my face, and I can hit it with my hand like this. It sets off a call button for them to come in, and I set it off, and they were like, well, you know, we're busy feeding patients right now, and you're going to have to wait. And, you know, and then I had to hit it again. And I was like, you guys don't understand. I need help immediately. Get in here now. And after I hit it the second time, they rushed in and took my blood pressure, and it was 250, 260 over. I never remember the lower number, but you know, my normal blood pressure as a quadriplegic is 85 over like 50. You know, 250, 260 is way up there. The head is pounding. I'm about ready to have a stroke. They rolled me over and the catheter got unkinked and the bag filled up immediately. And then it filled up again after they had emptied it, the night urine bag. And that was definitely the cause. I started to slowly come back to normal. But yeah, that was the fourth one. That's the last one I've had, and I'm trying my best not to have another one.
Good idea.
Right.
So what have you learned from all this that you can share with people?
Well, I mean, I've learned that each time I feel like it changes you. You almost gain some abilities. Like, I've noticed psychic type stuff. I've noticed a lot of that. I notice a lot of synchronicities in my life. And I'm not sure if I would notice that otherwise.
Hmm.
Things like, you know, people I meet are very similar to other people I've met over the years. Another thing, since I need so much help I have a lot of caregivers. I've had a lot of caregivers over these 33 years. I'll be starting my 34th year of being a quad in October. So it's quite a long time, and I've met tons and tons of people, different kinds of people, from every different country, every kind of person, every religion and race, and you get to know them on a really personal level. And there's a lot of like really bizarre synchronicities I've noticed between a couple people.
Can you give me an example of what you mean by that?
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. I could give you, it was in probably 2013. I hire all my own caregivers, and I was given an insurance settlement. So I manage all my own money and pay them. I don't use any government stuff, which is nice. You know, I don't have any control. I get to hire and work with the people I want to. So it was probably 2013. I hired a girl that I can just give you some of the things that I learned about her that are similar to another. So she basically, she's a massage therapist, and she's a blonde girl with blue eyes, and she's from New Jersey. And she was driving a black Jeep after I hired her. Her name was Rachel. And, you know, we got to know each other. We worked together for 2 years. Her dad was from New Jersey, and he had a house in a mountain town in Colorado. She would go up there, you know, on holidays and 4th of July and stuff like that. And anyway, so that's her. And then that had to be like 2017 when I met another lady through the same interview process, and Rachel no longer had worked for me. And this lady drives up in a black Jeep, and she gets out, and I kind of watch to see who's coming to my door to make sure that it's not, you know, so I make sure it's who is supposed to be coming before I open my door. She's walking up, and she's got blonde hair, and when, you know, she's got blue eyes, I noticed when we're doing the interview, and she tells me that she's from New Jersey. We started working together, and I learned that her dad has a house in the same mountain town that Rachel's did. And she's like, and you know, he has a party on the 4th of July. So if I have to work that day, it would be nice if you could try to have that covered. And I'm sitting there going, is this real? You know, and that's happened like two or three times. I have some other stories about that. I don't know what that is. I talk to people about that, but there's never a clear thing. And I don't know if that's connected to the NDEs or not, but I do notice that I see things, you know, I start to match things up and see a lot of connections like that.
Interesting. Before we wrap up, I just want to give you a little background here. We have listeners from all over the world, and wow, there's a lot of turmoil out there right now, right? There's wars, there's terrorists, there's natural disasters. Sorry, I'm not trying to bring everybody down, but I would love to hear a message of hope from you. Brighten our day. You are a good shining example. What do you have to say to lift everybody today?
Eric, I would have to say, if you think about what it would be like to have to live in a wheelchair and not be able to move your hands, that's bad. And I've been able to overcome that. And when I look at the world and the hatred and the divisive, the division that people are trying to create over like really small things that they don't matter. Those problems that people fight about, and, you know, they'll go to war and for just their opinion, you know, and that's not good, obviously, but those little things really don't matter. We have it good right now. The way, I mean, we live inside, we have electricity and running water, and that should be really good enough for us, I think.
What's the headline from that? Where are you going with that?
I guess I'm saying that, like, don't sweat the little stuff. You know, it's not worth digging in to where we have a giant war over these small issues. It's very petty. I mean, if we could get over that and have humanity be together as one, I think that would be better.
Yeah. Amen to all that. If anybody wants to find your artwork, your book, HendrickMedia.com, it'll be in the show notes. And Matt, thanks a ton for being with me today.
Hey, Eric, thank you for having me. I love it.
Thanks again for listening and sharing this podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button and sign up for our newsletter at roundtripdeath.com. If you want to share your near-death experience, or if you have questions or comments about the show, send an email to eric@roundtripdeath.com. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.